then began to teach them that the Son of Man may suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and after 3 days rise again. He spoke plainly about this, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But when Jesus turned and looked at his disciples, he rebuked Peter. "Get behind me, Satan," he said. "You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns." Then he called the crowd to him along with his disciples and said, "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? If anyone is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, the Son of Man will be ashamed of them when he comes in his Father's glory with the holy angels." So we look at Lent, preparing ourselves for what happens at Easter. And every year we kind of, for lack of a better word, practice Lent. And it's just preparing our hearts for what Christ did. It's a practical thing we do just to help us remember and not forget what Jesus did for us. The problem with a lot of Christians is that they think that they can live a Christian life the same way they watch television. Sitting in their lounge chair with a remote, and when something happens that they don't like, they just switch the channel. Whenever something unpleasant, tedious, demanding appears on the screen, they just switch it. There was an actor in a sci-fi movie a long time ago, and they were talking to him about this TV show, and he wanted to talk about how it tapped into the spirituality of the people that watch it. And he said that people are hungry for transcendence. They're looking for a feeling of mystery, that tingle you get when you feel God. We've created this culture that wants experiences over truth. And they attach truth to their experiences. And we've talked about this before. And that's something that we have to be very careful of, because sometimes our experience, although it may feel real, is not true to its true definition. Jesus has given the disciples in Scripture plenty of opportunities to feel these tingles, and there's nothing wrong with that, so don't get me wrong. But discipleship, true spirituality, involves much more than the tingles. It doesn't always feel good. Sometimes we have to hurt in order to grow. And so we must guard this attitude of self-gratification when it comes to our spirituality, and we tend to turn God into this self-gratifying commodity, this thing that just feeds us. And so in our 40 days with Jesus and our journey to become more like him, there are three personal decisions that we kind of have to choose to achieve. We have to make a decision. And so the first personal decision that we have to make as Christians, and even if you're not a believer, this is something that will help you throughout your life. The first one is self-denial. We must be careful not to confuse the call of God for self-denial with some kind of simplicity, like denying ourselves things so that we feel better. So like when we say, "Oh, I'm giving this up for Lent," that's all fine and dandy, but let's not pretend that that's really self-denial, right? I've given up not coffee this year because I just decided that it would be better for all of you that I don't do this. It is painful and punishing myself, that's for darn sure. But it's not a self-disciplined Christian thing. It's just punishing myself and others around me. But simplicity and self-discipline do not make you a Christian. So we can give up all sorts of stuff. We can say, oh, I'm going to give up Facebook. And well, you should. Facebook is irritating. Instagram. Sorry, it's all the same. I got it mixed up sometimes. Instagram and the Google box, you know, those things. Anyways, all that self media stuff is something we just feed ourselves, which is fine. It's fun. It's entertaining. And that's but if you're addicted to it, there was somebody said the other day, I think it was one of the youth guys at a conference. He said, if the first thing you reach for is your cell phone and open up Facebook, you're addicted. It's not a good thing. I think that was Andy, actually. Yeah. So we got to be careful with that. And so there are things that you need to self-deny just because it's smart, just because it's good. But I do find that sometimes at Lent, it helps us to kind of kickstart that. But it's not really a self-denial spiritual thing. It's more of a self-discipline, a betterment for your life. It shouldn't really impact you in a great positive way if you're really in self-denial. So self-denial has been explained this way. It is not the denial of something to the self, but the denial of the self itself. I'm going to read that again. It is not the denial of something to the self, but the denial of the self itself. It is the opposite of self-affirmation, of putting value on one's being, one's life, one's position before man or God, of claiming rights and privileges peculiar to one's special position in life, or even of those normally believed to belong to the human being as such. We cannot limit self-denial to a season of the year, such as Lent, because it is an attitude that generates daily submission of one's own will to another, to God's. And so true self-denial is submitting everything to God, and it doesn't matter what happens to us. That's hard. That's tough. It sounds scary, doesn't it? Because it is. Do we do this well? Not really. We try, but we don't do it super well. So those who deny themselves say no to the I, to ourselves, that would enslave them, and say yes to God who leads them in life. So to deny oneself is to be aware only of Jesus, only of God, only of Christ, and no more of yourself. To see only him who goes before and no more the road, which is too hard for us. Once more, all that self-denial can say is that Jesus leads the way, and he leads life, and I'm going to follow and keep him close. That's what self-denial says. Bonhoeffer defines self-denial in this way. He says, to deny oneself is to be aware only of Christ and no more of self, to see only him who goes before and the road, which is hard for us. Once more, is what I just said, self-denial can say, he leads the way, keep him close. That's Bonhoeffer. That's incredible. Every day we must open ourselves up to God's initiatives and to his control. Every day we have to do this. What does that look like in your life? I don't know. And it's not a judgment call on you. It's not to say, oh, you're a bad person. But what does it look like to you to self-deny? Self-denial takes shapes in many ways. For some, it may mean leaving a job because you're supposed to. It may mean uprooting yourself as the disciples did. They left their regular job, left their family, and they followed Jesus. They truly, truly followed him. For some, for the proud, it may mean renouncing that desire for status and honor. We really like to feel important, but we need to get rid of that. We need to just put it aside. Are you the kind of person that likes to take credit for things? It doesn't matter who's done it. It's done. As long as you're all in the same Same boat going in the same direction. For the greedy, it means renouncing that appetite for more, for wealth, for things. For the faint-hearted, it will have to be abandoning the craving for security. Are you in that boat where you just want to be safe? You always want to be secure? That's okay. But if it's taking over everything, that can really impact your life. For those that are angry, for the frustrated, the violent, they have to put aside that desire for revenge and justice. Are you a justice type person? You want justice? I do. I get mad. I get mad at things, at people. I'm not going to tell you that story. But I've had my moments where I'm like, I ain't letting this slide. Someone honked at me one day when I was out in the back alleyway, and I'm like, oh, just one sec, I'm just going to, because I couldn't get around. And then they decided to honk again. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I have no idea where this came from. I'm like, what is wrong with you? I said 1 minute. Is your life so important that you can't give me 1 minute to move? And they yelled at me, and they sign language. It was one finger. I didn't know what it meant. And I was like, what? And I tried to maintain some calmness. And then she said, I'm going to phone the township on you. I'm like, oh, I'm really afraid now. It's like they're going to come to my door and say, an hour ago you were blocking a road and now you're not. What are they going to do to me? I'm not doing it now. Anyways, but when we get angry, we can let that take over. And really, all I should have done is went, very sorry, I'll move the car. And if she gave me more sign language, I could have just been, oh, bless you as well. Whatever. The point is, there's so many different ways we can react to things, and when we're in self-denial, we need to just put ourselves aside. I got mad because I was ticked that somebody was interfering in my life, and really it wasn't a big deal, but my reaction was poor. Was what it was, and that's what happens when you lose sleep, so we get tired. But sometimes entire churches, entire bodies of Christ need to learn how to deny themselves. And I'm going to touch on something here that people don't like to hear about in church, but tithing, giving. And again, I'm not one that talks about this a lot, but I just want to put it in perspective. To tithe our offerings to help with mission in our community or to help others that are struggling is important. To give out of generosity, to give self-sacrificing, not so that we can run around and just blow money on stupid things, but in order to reach out to the community, or in order to reach out to you, to your family, to the people you love, and to empower you to do stuff in our community, we need to. It has to happen. And so giving is an important part. And it's not the type of giving that you see on TV. It's not that type of giving where you say, you know, give me $10 and I'll send you this Praise the Lord Ginzu steak knife. Or I'll give you this holy water from the Fraser River because I blessed it because I'm so holy and, you know, you're going to get a lot out of this, right, because I touched it because I'm a holy man. It's not like that. You're not getting something out of it. We give because we want to move forward the gospel. And so when I give, I don't give it and say, well, I really hope I get tenfold. Come on, God, you can do it. Oh, and then I walk away. Whew, I think he's going to give me tenfold. I really believe in my heart. It's not about you. It's about giving for the cause of the gospel. So I say that with all due respect to all of you, not to push that, but to just say it is a thing that we need to practice. It's a thing that in your own life, and it doesn't mean you're writing off the farm and handing out the check and saying, see you later, I'm out. I mean, if you do that, I'm not going to argue. I'm sure the board will be fine with it. But in your life, you don't have to do that. But give because you want to. Don't give with a mindset of, I'm going to get something out of it. And don't give where it's like, oh, I'm begrudgingly giving this. I'm angry about doing it. If you're going to do it that way, don't do it, right? Just don't give. And I know I shouldn't have maybe said that with the board members in the room, but what I'm meaning is if you're going to do it with a bad attitude, nothing works well. Have you ever been in a situation where somebody's doing a good thing and they got a really horrible attitude about it? It's just so much fun, isn't it? They're such a blast to be around. It's not, I got to help these poor starving children again. It's like, ugh. You know, that doesn't sound very good. So self-denial, it's not about you. And so we can get focused on ourself, on our schedules, on our celebrations, which we love, our fellowship, the decorations, whether they're in the right spots or not, vacations, which I love. We can get focused on all those things. And we can also get so focused on the process of Lent and Easter that Jesus is reaching out saying, hey, I'm over here. But we're so focused on self, because I'm in self-denial, Jesus. I'm going to suffer for you. And then we miss it. We don't even actually pay attention to him. We're suffering for him, but we're not suffering for him. We're suffering for us. So it's self-denial. The second personal decision we have to make is self-sacrificing, or back in the day we called it bearing a cross. The cross is the heart of the gospel message, and bearing a cross is the central movement of Christianity and discipleship. Making the confession that Jesus is Christ is not enough. If he is the Christ, then he expects us to follow him and obey his word. And so he doesn't ask for modest adjustments in our lives, for little tweaks here and there. He asks us for a complete overhaul of our behavior. Does that mean it's going to happen right away? No, and this is where we get confused. It's a process. You're going to work on things. You're going to work, and he's going to work on things through you. And sometimes we have attitudes or habits or things that God knows we're not ready to deal with them, and that's okay. That's okay. When he decides that it's time to work on it, you will know. So if you're the type, I was having a conversation in the foyer just before. If you ask for patience, have fun with that. Just, you know what, just get patience instead. Don't ask for it, just have it. It's a lot easier. My mother, years ago, when we were going through rough times, she said, I prayed to God for patience, and everything went wrong. It just went haywire. She'd be walking from the grocery store. The groceries would fall out of the bottom, and the bag was wet, and she'd get somebody to drive by and splash her with a puddle. Like, it was just a disaster. Everything went wrong. Everything went sideways. Now, that could have been just really bad coincidence, but I'm telling you now, she learned it. So what's the answer there? Maybe not patience with me or the other sons, but patience with other people in general. But bearing a cross, he calls for us to completely overhaul our behavior, again, in a process. And he calls us to bear a cross. Cross-bearing refers to the self-sacrifice that we've been talking about, even to the point of giving one's life. That's big. That's really big. Giving one's life for someone else, that is self-sacrifice. This is very big in military and emergency service, like police, fire, like big self-sacrifice. You'll throw yourself in front of a bullet for another person. You'll go into a burning building and drag somebody out. Like, that's self-sacrificing, giving your life for someone else. And you know, we do a big rah-rah powwow in the morning with the boys around the fire truck. And the thing is this, their life's in my hands sometimes, and my life is in their hands. And, you know, what kind of insane, crazy person runs into a burning building? Or what kind of crazy person, you know, like police officers run into really ugly situations? Like, scary stuff. But they do it because they care. It's self-sacrificing. It's unbelievable. And so giving one's life is the biggest sacrifice, and Christ showed us that. The call for self-sacrifice, however, is in some churches and on TV has been given a soft sell. They've been selling it to you. Jesus doesn't offer his disciples a variety of self-fulfillment in whatever your dreams would be and come true. Intoxicating spiritual experiences, he doesn't promise that. Or intellectual stimulation, he doesn't promise those things. He presents them with the cross, and he does not invite them to try the cross on for size and see if they like it. Does this fit right? Is it? Does it? Should it? Maybe I tuck it in a little bit more. It's not like that. He doesn't ask for volunteers so you can get extra credit. And this is something that separates a disciple from an admirer. You can like what Jesus did from afar, or you can jump right in. And there's a difference between being a disciple, following one's teachings and obeying, and just admiring that he was a good guy. There's a big difference. I don't know what that looks like in your life. I don't know how that relationship with God looks like in your life. But honestly, we need to think these things through, and don't beat yourself up over it, but think about it. God is not looking to exclude you. He's looking to include you. You just have to want to. And discipleship is a lot more than surveying the wondrous cross, which is a great song. It's more than the old rugged cross, singing it. It has to be an obedience in Jesus. It has to be something we live out. So what does this mean? To take up your cross means that you have to engage in suffering. One writer says taking up your cross means subjecting yourself to shame to the howling hostile mob. Sounds pretty scary. The disciples did this. They staked their lives on their confessions that Jesus was the Messiah that came, and they followed him in the way of suffering. Did they make mistakes along the way? Of course they did. They weren't perfect. They're like us. They made tons of mistakes. But their process was incredible, to where they started to where they became. And so those people that we talk about as admirers acknowledge him, Jesus, as the Messiah, or even as the Son of God, but they'll dig their heels in when it comes to actually following him down to a particular path that may lead to harm or even death. So there's a difference between living it and admiring it, and we need to be aware of these things. You've all seen the movies where the priests get the cross and they're convincing someone. This is going back in the days, old movies, but where they're pushing it in somebody's face, the power of Christ compels you, all that kind of stuff, and they're pushing it and they're forcing them to change. They're trying to persuade them with this cross. I tell you that Jesus does not call you to wave a cross in anyone's face. He doesn't ask you to throw it in their face. He asks you to carry it. That's the difference. We can do a lot of waving, but to actually pick it up and carry it is different. We've seen that the cross can have so many different meanings. It can have, it's been mixed up with fashion accessories and pieces of jewelry and tattoos and all that kind of stuff. It's actually also a decoration for military heroism. It's in emergency services. It's got Maltese crosses. It's got crosses everywhere. But we lose the meaning of it because it's attached to things that don't fit with what Christ did. And sometimes we can say, and we can confuse the difference between bearing a cross. We can say, oh, this is the cross I bear. We use that term in the church a lot, and we can attach it to, well, this is a physical hurt that I have, an injury, and that's the cross I bear. Some problem in the family. Oh, my brothers are this, or my sister's that. That's the cross we bear. We say these things, or some horrible event in the past that happened. Oh, because this happened, it's the cross I bear. That's not a correct way to use it. That's a personal thing that happened to you. Does it make it any less real? No, it's still a real thing that happened to you. It's still a real problem. But it's not bearing a cross. It's just having life problems. So when we say that's the cross I bear, be very careful. The cross does not refer to bearing patiently with things in life, with aches and pains and problems. We have only found Christ when we are more concerned about others than we are ourselves. And so following Jesus to the cross, to Golgotha, is not some monotonous detour that takes us. It's the main journey. Heading to the cross is the main journey. And so we can only hope to be ready when he leads us through this journey and not dig our heels in and fight it. The third and final personal decision we have to make is we need to cast away self-wisdom or worldly wisdom, as we would say, worldly wisdom. Worldly wisdom will always dismiss the cross as stupidity, craziness. Why would somebody do that? Worldly vision does that. Love serves no matter how much it costs, no matter how much it clashes head-to-head with worldly vision. It believes that we should seek our own advantage no matter how much it hurts with Christ. It is Jesus turning conventional wisdom on its head. Jesus, the pathway to Christ doesn't make sense to this world out there because it's all about self. What is happening to me? Why do I feel this way? It's not fair. That is what gets in our way. And in our own personal lives, we can do this. Why is this happening to me? Why can't I do better? Why can't I be whatever? These are the things that get in our way. But if you're going, you know what, it's all about Jesus, all about Christ, that job that you don't like, do it for Jesus. I know it sounds strange, but be the best you can for Jesus in that job. Be the best witness. Be the best whatever you are in that job. If you're a stay-at-home mom, be the best stay-at-home mom you've ever been. Yes, get out, talk with some adults for a while because, you know, you're going to go crazy. But definitely get out and be the best you can be for Christ and stop looking at self-fulfillment. Self-fulfillment's great. And all these books that talk about positive thinking, that's fine and dandy and whatever. You need to be positive. That's all good. But ultimately, what's the reason why you do what you do? Whether it's work, whether it's school, whether it's life, why do you do it? Do you do it because of yourself, or do you do it because Christ has called you? And so we have to really figure this out, because worldly wisdom doesn't want you to think about others. It wants you to think about you only. And so the message of the cross is different. Jesus flips it around. And so this self-giving love that Christ shows by example, it still is a mystery to many of us that are followers and have been followers for a long time. He gives us advice on how to actually save your soul. And it's interesting in this verse. He says one has to lose your life to save it. And the disciples, you know, they got it in the end. They realized that they needed to grasp the cross, the very thing that could put them to death. We don't have those fights. We don't have those issues here in Canada right now where we have to fight to be a Christian, to be a believer. And so this challenges our faith, this mindset of losing your life to save it, because many times we just go about living our own lives. And so in Mark chapter 8, Peter's rebuked by Jesus because of what was going on. And he said, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of man." Because Peter can see in this portion of Scripture, he's saying he can see a future with Jesus as a political leader. He can see it. And he doesn't want Jesus to go down the path of death because it sounds ridiculous. Peter's going, "Let's just go cut somebody's ears off, man. Let's get nuts. Let's get into town and start whipping tables out and just beating on people because they can't do this. We're going to take over. That's Peter. That's some of us. Let's just smack people around until they believe. It's fun. But Peter was rebuked by Satan, or by Jesus, and he's like, no, you're not going to take me off the goal that I have and the path that I have to go on. And so Jesus saw these thoughts going through Peter's head, through his mind, and it was in conflict with the direction, with the mission that Christ had for us, with his salvation, with for humanity, with his redemption, all that, it was gone. And so the focus had to be accomplished, and nothing was going to stop him from accomplishing this mission. And so I can guarantee you that Peter knew about Isaiah 53 and how it foretells of all these things happening. But sometimes we can't get past our own thoughts. Sometimes we get in our own head, and it messes us up. And it's the same for them, the disciples back in the day, as it is for us now in 2017. We can get in our head. And so Jesus makes it clear. He says, if you're on God's side, this is what you need to do. He says in 34, and calling a crowd to him with his disciples, he said, if anyone would come after me, let them deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel will save it. The final verses of this scripture, Jesus gives us the prerequisite for following him, the prerequisite for discipleship. And it's first to deny ourselves. Second is to take up our cross. Take up our cross. And these requirements go way beyond just being a good person and not doing, having wrongdoings, not sinning, not being a bad person. They move further by laying down our life in a willing manner as a way of submitting it to the power and the strength of that dad's strength, that heavenly God strength. We lay it down to him. He makes the decisions. He decides, not us. So daily cross-bearing leads to the death of a life on our own, that is a death that is lived out in our own strength. It is an exchange for this new life that is lived and experienced by the power of God. And so I hope today that you will see in your life things that you need to die to. What does that look like in your life? I can't answer that for you. Only you know. And you don't have to make a list and say, today I'm going to die to this, today I'm going to die. It takes time. This is a process. That's why we talk about a journey to seek God, a journey, a relationship with him. Because all relationships need to be built with a journey. They need to be built with experiences. They need to be built with knowledge. They need to be built with communication. And with God, it's the same. And so when you have a relationship or got married or whatever, you didn't just walk in and poof, everything was perfect. Well, except for my marriage, it was perfect when I walked in. But it doesn't just happen. You build on that. You make mistakes. You correct. Things get corrected. Just, you know, that was a joke, the marriage thing. I don't want to hear about it later, okay? It was a joke. It didn't go over well. It was a rough crowd, but it didn't go over well. As you walk through these relationships with God, you need to realize that he's going to walk you through this. He's going to help you. And how does he do that? Well, by you reading his word, by you communing with other Christians, by you getting together, fellowshipping, learning from each other, and growing that relationship. If you're wondering why God isn't speaking to you, there's reasons possibly why. You might not be listening. Maybe there's too much noise in your life. Or maybe he's just being silent, so you'll shut up for a minute. It's very possible. Sometimes we talk so much to God that I'm sure he's going, okay, that's enough. I'm sure he's way more patient than I am. So as we go through our journey, think of things that God's laying on your heart this morning that you need to work on? You need to die to self. Put the things of God first. That's why Scripture always talks about the thoughts of God, the mind of God. Because we want to be a part of that. If you're wondering where your life's going, God might not tell you, but he'll walk with you through it. And that's where we like control. We want to know what God is going to do in our lives. How many like to know? How many would like to know? How many likes, hey, God, just send me an email. I'd like to really know. Send me a text. Send me a Bitmoji just to give me an idea. Anything. That's for the younger crowd. Is that not cool anymore? Oh. Here I thought I was cool, and now I lost it. All right, well. So think about what you need to do and do it and ask God to show you and just pray. Honestly, really, that's all you got to do. And work through your journey with him.